What's up, Pharmacy Nation? I'm Pharmacy Joe. Thank you for being a listener of the Elective Rotation, a critical care and hospital pharmacy podcast. This is episode 491. In this episode, I'll discuss pharmacy-related COVID-19 updates. I have all the evidence supporting today's show linked up in the show notes at pharmacyjoe.com/episode-491. The first update is that the FDA has issued an emergency use authorization for hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine to be used in patients with COVID-19. The FDA has also prepared patient and healthcare provider fact sheets. Links to all of these materials are in the show notes. If you're dispensing either of these medications from supplies from the Strategic National Stockpile, please review the healthcare provider fact sheets as there are several mandatory items that must be completed. As pharmacists will be sure to realize, this is not the same as an FDA-approved use in the traditional sense. This is emergency authorization for an unapproved use. The FDA strongly encourages the conduct and participation in randomized controlled clinical trials that may produce evidence concerning the effectiveness of these medications in treating COVID-19. The authorization is based on the limited in vitro, case series, and anecdotal reports of these medications and subject to change pending higher levels of evidence. The main purpose of the FDA issuing the emergency use authorization is to facilitate the availability of chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine during the COVID-19 pandemic to treat patients for whom a clinical trial is either not available or if participation in a trial is not feasible. Access will be handled through the Strategic National Stockpile and distribution will be done to states by FEMA. This means the way for hospitals to access this supply of medications is by making a request through your local or state health department. And I have numbers linked to all of the health departments in the show notes. One possible immediate benefit of this authorization is that the recommended frequency for hydroxychloroquine is for it to be administered once daily. This should help cut down on unnecessary med passes by nurses that would otherwise consume personal protective equipment. There is now more information on how French authors of the hydroxychloroquine plus azithromycin study have evaluated the QTC risk of this combination. The same authors of the first study of these medications have a new observational study of 80 patients receiving hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin published. There is no control group in this new study. In the methods section, they detail how the QTC risk-benefit was evaluated. 12 lead EKGs were performed on each patient before treatment and 2 days after treatment began. The treatment was either not started or discontinued when the QTC was greater than 500 milliseconds and the risk-benefit ratio was estimated to be between 460 to 500 milliseconds. I assume this last statement about risk-benefit ratio is a bit unclear just due to a translation error from French to English. I take it to mean that if the QTC was between 460 and 500, then an individualized risk-benefit analysis would be done to decide what course of action to take. The treatment was not started when EKG showed patterns suggesting a channelopathy and the risk-benefit ratio was discussed when it showed other significant abnormalities like a bundle branch block or hypertrophy. In addition, any drug potentially prolonging the QT interval was discontinued during treatment. As with the first study, no details on the QTC intervals of the participants were included. For more on how to evaluate the unknown risk of QTC interaction between hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin, you can listen to episode 488. It's hard to do a risk-benefit analysis when the benefit of the medications is based on such a low level of evidence. It's also equally as hard to tell a patient that a treatment popularized in the media cannot be given to them due to an unknown risk of QTC prolongation. My inclination is to use the combination in most patients, checking EKGs daily as resources allow in those who may be at higher risk of QTC prolongation. If the QTC risk for an individual patient is too high, I would consider either dropping the azithromycin component or pursuing access to remdesivir. And that brings me to the next update. There is now an official expanded access trial for remdesivir on clinicaltrials.gov, a link in the show notes. This is now Gilead's preferred method to provide access to remdesivir. This is not a placebo-controlled trial. Every patient enrolled receives remdesivir. The inclusion criteria is that the patient is willing and able to provide written informed consent or a legal representative can do so. The patient is 18 or older. The patient's hospitalized with COVID-19 or has a PCR test pending and a high suspicion for infection. The patient requires mechanical ventilation. The patient has adequate renal function, a GFR at least 30. The ALT is less than 5 times the upper limit of normal. And the exclusion criteria is evidence of multi-organ failure, pressor requirement to maintain blood pressure, renal failure with a GFR less than 30, or dialysis, or continuous veno-venous hemofiltration, and pregnancy. There is contact information, again, in the show notes, but I would always rely on the clinicaltrials.gov page to get the most up-to-date contact information to get access to remdesivir this way. Now, even though pregnancy and patients under 18 are excluded in this trial, the compassionate use method that is still on Gilead's website states that those patients will be considered for access via compassionate use. The next update is about enteral tube administration of hydroxychloroquine. These tablets are labeled Do Not Crush. However, a Belgian guideline on treatment of COVID-19 recommends crushing hydroxychloroquine tablets to be given via an NG tube. I'm not quite sure why they're labeled Do Not Crush, as there are studies that provide stability data for an oral suspension. Some manufacturers are film-coated, and compounding instructions in some institutions suggest removal of this coating prior to preparing a suspension. Shout out to Pharmacy Tammy for her anecdotal reports of nurses crushing hydroxychloroquine tablets at the bedside, leading to clogged NG tubes. If you have the resources to prepare the suspension for your nurses, that sounds like the ideal scenario. Many hospitals are experiencing MDI shortages currently, and or they're reevaluating common canister policies in light of COVID-19. While they have not developed guidelines, the Institute for Safe Medication Practices does have an excellent article on the subject if it's something that you're dealing with right now. Again, the link to this is in the show notes at pharmacyjoe.com/episode491. And finally, everyone is eagerly awaiting better evidence regarding therapeutics for treatment of COVID-19. A reminder on some upcoming data that I discussed back in episode 486. Two randomized double-blind placebo-controlled trials of remdesivir are due to be complete in April. One is a study of 308 patients with mild to moderate disease, and the other is a study of 453 patients with severe disease. Several studies of hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine are underway, and the earliest expected result is in May of 2020. This does not include the trial reportedly being done in New York City of hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin. To those APPE students whose hospital rotation has been disrupted by recent events, one way I'd like to help is by providing free access to 8 essential training videos on topics that I discuss with students on my rotation. Get free 14-day access by going to pharmacyjoe.com/virtual. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you in the next episode of the Elective Rotation.